Chris Hedges is a journalist who has covered many wars, including the first Gulf War, in which he was captured by Saddam Hussein's Republican Guard. After that, he kept covering war, including the war in the Balkans. When he gave up war reporting, he began to see war as a narcotic that is peddled by mythmakers like the state, historians, and even journalists who make it seem exciting and exotic. Hedges reflects on this in his book, War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning. He's opposed to the war with Iraq. We may see some live coverage of the battlefield because this time around journalists are traveling with the military. I asked Hedges how he thinks this coverage might affect the American people. Well, another question about the press coverage we're likely to get. Is it fair to say that for the first time there's going to be the possibility of live coverage from the battlefield? Because there's satellites, there's video cameras, there's satellite phones. What do you think the effect might be on the American public of watching this play out live in some circumstances?
I'm very skeptical that we'll see very much that's live.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, when you go into combat and you're in the back of an Amtrak and it's dark and it's about 100 degrees and there's constant movement, you just don't have time to set up a satellite and film anything. It's also highly unlikely that the first wave, those units that go in, will be taking journalists with them. I think that they may be with a unit, but the Army is going to decide how they want that the day's events packaged and presented. And I think the other thing you have to remember is that most reporters in a war zone don't really want to get anywhere near the fighting. I think that because you're with a unit that may be close to a front line, doesn't mean you're actually going to be filming and shooting, you know, right up at the edge, which frankly is very difficult and very dangerous anyway.
You've cautioned about the myth-making of war. Have you heard myth-making so far?
Yes, completely. I mean, we don't look at ourselves in wartime with any kind of self-criticism or self-awareness. We have become good. We have become the saviors of the planet. I mean, this flies in the face of tremendous opposition and anger towards us across the globe. But even our allies, the French, the British, when they criticize the effort, we turn on them. And, you know, I find the jokes about the French on the late night shows, I don't find them funny. They're racist. And they are a symptom of our narcissism, the fact that we now stare into the pool and see only our own reflection, and a symptom of that racism that is always the flip side of nationalism.
So you see this moment as one of those moments in time where there's a before and an after, and everything has changed in that after moment. What are some of the changes you see as we cross this line?
We are about to become a colonizing power in one of the most unstable regions of the world.
What does that mean to you?
Well, as soon as we become a colonizer, all of the values that I think are real within our country and that I cherish are jettisoned. And, you know, you can't be a military occupier of a country and speak about democracy and finally even have democracy. And I think what is happening now is what happened to Israel in 1967. It is exactly the same. The terrible tragedy of Israel was that it didn't hand those lands back.
In your book, War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning, you write, when I left war zones, the nightmares descended on me like furies. I had horrible visions of war. Are they coming back now? Or are you getting like flashbacks or more nightmares or anything?
I try not to watch too many images. Because, yes, it does bring it back, and I try not to do that at night. But certainly, you know, when I think about the war, I do think about southern Iraq, where I spent 8 days after the war with the Iraqi Republican Guard, I think about one particular scene where it was raining when I was we were trying to move north to Baghdad. I was with a light armor battalion. And all the water purification plants had been bombed, so there was no clean water. And we had to drink water from mud puddles. I mean, you could taste the dirt. Turned my own guts inside out. And I remember one day we stopped, and around this puddle of water the color of coffee was a young mother with an infant and a toddler, and they were scooping up the water to drink because it's all they had. And I knew what that water had done to my own guts. It turned it inside out. And no one spoke English, but I remember in the rain reciting W.H. Auden's epitaph on a tyrant. Perfection of a kind was what he was after, and the poetry he invented was easy to understand. He knew human folly like the back of his hand, and was greatly interested in armies and fleets. When he laughed, respectable senators burst with laughter, and when he cried, the little children died in the streets. That's what I think of.
You're critical of yourself in your book that you helped disseminate the myth of war. What do you think you were guilty of when you were a war reporter?
I only disseminated the myth of war when I wrote about my own nation at war. And what you do is you give it a kind of narrative and coherency that war never has. You look for that hometown hero. I was less guilty of this. In the Gulf War, you know, the press needed a national hero, so Norman Schwarzkopf became the national hero. If it had been another commanding general, it would have become that general. You look for the evidence of the perfidious crimes of the enemy. You look for those people who are glad you liberated them. You give it a kind of storyline. You found that in firefights. You know, as soon as a firefight ended, one of the things you would begin to do almost immediately is think, how am I going to explain this? How am I going to talk about it? Because firefights themselves, like all war, are confusing. I mean, you most of the time you don't know what's going on. You can see almost nothing. And this is why War and Peace is such a great book, because you see this tiny corner of a battlefield that even then you don't understand. That is part of the myth of war, and nations at war always do it. It's why the war correspondent, since the creation of the modern war correspondent in the Crimean War, has always been and will always be part of the problem. If you go into Bosnia, I reported it in a sensory manner, in a sense that, you know, here was a burning house, here were bodies in the street, my story's finished. But if I was a Muslim or a Croat, or a Serb going into a town, which my forces had just liberated, then I would give it that narrative. I would, I would make it coherent. I would make it fit the myth.
Chris Hedges is a reporter for the New York Times and the author of the book War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning.